We're going to weave Vents Day and our Vents Day segment in together with our interview with Nancy Fishman, who again is the project director for the Center on Sentencing and Corrections at the Vera Institute of Justice, who holds BA and JD degrees from Yale University and an MA in Human Development and Social Policy from Northwestern University. So versed in several fields, I see, Nancy. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Oh, happy to be here.
Give us the basic sketch, if you would, on the Vera Institute and what it does.
Sure. The Vera Institute of Justice is a nonprofit organization. We're based in New York, but we've got offices elsewhere. We focus on, we drive change. We are really focused on improving the systems that people rely on for justice and safety. And we partner in most cases with government at the local and state level to help them understand what issues, what the problems are, and develop kind of develop ways of addressing them.
Is VERA an acronym, or is it a...
No, actually, VERA is the name of the founder's mother, and it was founded in 1961 and named after Vera Schweitzer. So it is the Vera Institute.
So you were doing this work, I understand, even before joining VERA. Tell us about what drives you to make the moves you're making in criminal justice reform.
Well, I think, you know, the criminal justice system is one of, you know, the great, in many ways, represents right now a huge failure of our democracy in the sense that we have so many, you know, we have so many people going into the system who potentially don't need to be there. We have a system that is serving to exacerbate the inequality in this country and disparities by race and ethnicity. And I think that this is, you know, one of the critical issues of our time. It behooves all of us, I think, to pay attention to a source of such sort of significant inequality in this country.
You know, it's something that journalists always struggle with, trying to explain the difference between jail and prison. There is a difference.
Sure.
One of your major goals is to reform the overuse of jail, as you see it,
yeah,
at Vera. How is it being used now that you object to?
Well, first of all, you mentioned the difference between jail and prison, and I think it's important before you can even explain that to address the question, to explain that and answer that question. State prisons are where people are held who are, for the most part, sentenced. They have gone through the justice system. They have either been taken a plea or they've been found guilty at trial, and they are serving out a sentence of as a result of that. Jails are local facilities, and in most cases, they are holding primarily people who are being held pretrial. That means they're legally innocent. They have not been, they have not yet been proven guilty. And that is, you know, that is critical. It's not a technicality. It is the Constitution. They will hold individuals who are, sentenced to, short sentences some of the time. People usually in most places less than a year. And also, people who are awaiting hearings on violations of probation or parole. Sometimes they hold, detainees for the federal government, for the Marshal Services, sometimes for ICE, immigration detention, pending a hearing in that case. But for the large part, most jails now, and nationally we know, that 60% in a lot of places is a lot more of the people who are sitting in jail are being held pretrial. And what we've seen over the course of the last, 30, 40 years, in particular the last 20 years, is that we are now, holding more and more people pretrial than ever before. And these are people, again, who are legally innocent, who in many cases could be released on their own recognizance or released with some sort of supervision pending the resolution of their case, but they're not. And, you know, one really interesting thing we found when we looked at the data is that this is not, you know, the increase of people in jail is not because people are committing more crimes or people are being arrested for more serious crimes. You know, in In 1983, for every 100 people who were arrested, 51 people were booked into the jail. By 2012, arrest rates had gone down considerably, but for every 100 people arrested, 95 people were booked into the jail. So that you're not more likely to be arrested now, but you're much more likely to be booked into the jail if you are arrested. A lot of places depend heavily on bail systems, on financial bail, which means that no matter how dangerous you are, how likely you are to flee the jurisdiction, if you have the money, you get out. No matter how strong your community connections, no matter how minor the offense, if you don't have the money to pay bail, you are going to end up staying in jail for the duration of your case, which even on misdemeanors can be 3 months, 6 months. And it means that a lot of people will take a plea, even if it's to something they didn't do, because it's the only way that they can get out of jail, which means that we've got a lot of people sitting in jail who don't need to be in jail. They're there largely because they are fundamentally poor, because our system is now set up to have the default be incarcerate someone pending trial rather than let them go pending trial, which means that we're not using the jail in a way that is which is smart, frankly. It's a very expensive and very, from everything we know about research, a very damaging process to the people who go through it. It makes them more likely to get a sentence of incarceration. It makes them more likely to recidivate. We're using this for, in many cases, people who really, really don't need to be there and who are going to show up to court and who are not likely to commit a serious crime while they're waiting for their cases. But we've locked them up anyway.
Nancy Fishman works at the Vera Institute of Justice in New York, where she's working to convince society not to use jail too much in the criminal justice system. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with specific questions for Nancy at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. If you have just general comments about criminal justice as part of our Vent Stay segment, hang on. When we let Nancy go, we'll really open the phones up wide. The idea, though, about you mentioned 1980s, 100 arrests, 51 mm-hmm. people would stay in jail. Now it's 95 people staying in jail for every 100
yeah.
arrests. Pulling the numbers apart a little further, are the crimes of greater severity?
No, they're not. I mean, I think if we look at crime rates nationally, and obviously it varies jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and I'm not making a blanket statement about every place, but if you look across the country at national figures, violent crime rates are down. Property crime rates are down. You're actually seeing, and that's what I mean by arrest rates actually have gone down across the country. What's changed is how we respond to arrest, that we now assume that arrest must mean that you have to be booked into jail. You know, in the past, it's not only that people were staying a shorter period of time, and we know now also more people are being given bail amounts to pay rather than being released on their own recognizance than they ever were before. It's just that it used to be that you wouldn't necessarily have been brought to the jail. You might have been given a desk appearance ticket. You might have been given a field citation, or some other, form that would tell you when you were supposed to show up to court. And, you know, the reality is that even across the country appearance rates are high. And we know that simple things like sending automated reminder notices, either by mail or by text, can improve appearance rates. So most people remarkably do what they're told, and the ones who don't show up often, it's because we're dealing with individuals who have mental health issues. A lot of these folks are being swept into the criminal justice system because there are fewer resources and sort of response mechanisms to people with mental illness who are also homeless or who in particular may also have substance use issues. And a lot of those folks end up in the jail, and it's hard for them to get out.
Nancy, I noticed by Vera's numbers there are 731,000 people in jail pretty much any day of the year, and I wonder if that is part of or in addition to the oft-cited 2.2 million behind bars in America.
It's part of. So, you know, I would say the majority of people who are behind bars on any given day in this country are in state facilities, state prisons. You have probably, you know, a third or so who are in, maybe less, who are in jails. You have a small and even smaller amount who are in federal facilities. And then if you add in juveniles, people being held in secure juvenile facilities and detention facilities, that kind of makes up the smallest sliver.
Both states, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add, but the other number to know, which I think is important, is admission. So there are about, as you said, a little over 700,000 in any one day in jail, but there are almost 12 million admissions to jail annually. Now, that's not individuals, that's admissions. Some people come in more than once, but that is almost 20 times the rate of admissions into state and federal prisons. And a lot of those folks don't stay a long time, but that 12 million number gives you a sense of the reach of local jails into communities. They're affecting lots and lots of people, lots and lots of families. And research we have now shows that even a short stay in jail can be damaging in the long term, both to sort of a range of community outcomes, but also to criminal justice outcomes, which is, in the end is bad news for communities.
Now, again, of the two states we serve, both have made some moves to reduce population at the state prisons. In California, it was done through realignment, Assembly Bill 109 a few years ago, which essentially sent people who were considered nonviolent, non-sexual offenders to county jails to serve out their sentences. Does that fit within what Vera would like to see happen or not?
Well, I mean, I think that there are, you know, we're watching to see what happens in California. I think a lot of the moves at the state level are to make offenses less, you know, certain offenses don't necessarily need state time. The idea of having them, serving them in local jails, shorter sentences versus into state prison is definitely seems to be about restoring proportionality to our sentencing system and making sure that the kinds of punishment that we are imposing actually, you know, fit the crime in a really basic level. I think one of the challenges is that a lot of jails, you know, that we have to pay attention to is, are, do jails have the capacity to take folks in? Are they, particularly if people are serving sentences there, do they have the services to help people be prepared for reintegration into the community? A lot of jails are not set up as what you would think of as a correctional facility with programs and services, et cetera. They are, you know, they're set up as temporary holding facilities, which means that conditions can be very bad and the kinds of resources there for individuals are just not available. So I think that that's an important part of the picture that has to be part of any realignment.
Okay, Nancy, I want to talk to you for a few minutes on the other side of this break. We have to take one now. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Nancy Fishman, then Vince Day on criminal corrections in 1 minute. 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about criminal justice in this hour and eventually sliding off on that topic into our Vince Day segment just a few minutes away. Nancy Fishman is our guest on the Exchange. She is the project director at the Center on Sentencing and Corrections at the Vera Institute of Justice based in New York City. One of the major arguments that her organization is making is that we use jail too much in America. People should be checked in for their crimes and then given some latitude to be able to get out and await trial. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with specific questions for Nancy. Otherwise, hold your stuff for Vince Day in just a couple of minutes. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So I understand there's a whole project at Vera, the Safety and Justice Challenge. Tell us a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. The Safety and Justice Challenge is an initiative of the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And Vera is one of the partners that the working with the foundation on implementing this challenge, which is focused on changing the way America thinks about and uses jails. So as part of that challenge, the foundation, MacArthur Foundation, held a competition and selected 20 sites, jurisdictions around the country that were interested in developing strategies to reduce their jail populations. So 20 sites, we were a one of the organizations that worked with sites to help them plan jail reduction strategies. And then of those 20, 11 were selected to receive funding right now to implement those strategies, and the other 9 are received some funding to continue to work with the opportunity of applying for funding, implementation funding down the line. And so each of those jurisdictions are have spent a good deal of time using data to analyze their local justice systems to understand what was driving the jail population. There are two things that drive jail populations, that make jail populations what they are. One is admissions, right? How many people come in. And the other is length of stay, how long they stay when they're there. And so what these jurisdictions did was analyze, using data and system mapping and reviews of policies and practices, all the decisions that get made from the moment someone first encounters law enforcement all the way through sentencing and disposition, and figure out what were the decisions that were impacting the jail population the most. And then looked at whether that was helping them achieve the jail system that they want or wasn't. And if there were people going in that they didn't want to go in, how could they make different decisions to get them out? So types of reforms they're looking to implement include moving away from a cash bail system to one that's based on an assessment of risk of failure to appear or risk of public safety, looking at diversion programs for people with mental illness in particular, but also people with substance use disorders, finding better ways of responding to those things, looking at how people are charged, looking at how the length of time of case processing, which can mean that somebody who's in jail stays there for a really long time, and then looking at things like how the system responds to people who violate probation. Are there a lot of people who are violating probation who are ending up back in jail? Are there better ways of responding to those issues? And so we'll see over the next few years as these jurisdictions implement these strategies what the impact is on their jail populations. And there are a lot of jurisdictions already around the country that have taken real steps and have been down their jail population. I'm based out of New York City, and in the 1990s, Rikers Island, the infamous jail here, had a population of almost 20,000. It now has less than 10,000. And that's a combination of reductions in crime, but also changes in policing, changes in other kinds of responses to within the criminal justice system that have helped led to a lower jail population.
I remember reading a New Yorker piece about a year or two ago about a young man who was sent to Rikers, and his trial got delayed and delayed and delayed. He ended up spending more than 2 years in there awaiting trial, which ultimately I think didn't happen.
Right, and the charges were dropped. That was Khalif Browder. He was in for 3 years, actually, 2 of those years in solitary confinement. And as a result of that, and it was for stealing a backpack, but he couldn't make bail, so he couldn't get out. And he was very sad. He subsequently could not recover from that, even after he was released, and he committed suicide. And I think it prompted most recently a lot of soul searching here in New York and elsewhere about, how does that happen? How does a young man for a very low level offense end up spending so much time in jail? And what damage can the system cause someone, a system that is supposed to be about keeping us safe?
So the final question, I guess, then is when you look at how things have changed to make people spend more time in jail, more people and more time, does it appear to be often because of changes in laws or changes in policy? I mean, where is most of the change, particularly with bail, coming from?
I mean, a lot of it is changing. I mean, there's an impact of law in that sentencing laws affect, you know, sort of how people are charged and in a lot of places how bail is set. A lot of the rules and around bail are set at the state level. So, you know, there are jurisdictions, for example, that have set bail schedules. And so there's no individualized determination of are you at risk for failing to appear or are you dangerous and can you afford this? Because we're not in this country, you're not supposed to lock people up because they're poor, right? We are debtors' prisons are illegal. But I think that so state law has evolved around this. And then a lot of it is practice. I think that there's a real mix. I mean, one of the things that I find particularly exciting and valuable about working at the local level to reduce jail populations is that a lot of those decisions are, in fact, made at the local level, which means that people can make different decisions if they decide they want different outcomes. So police can change how they police and who they book into the jail and who they give a citation release. You know, prosecutors can look at how they're charging and whether they're objecting or cooperating with efforts to get out of the jail people who don't need to be there, whether they're supporting diversion programs for people who also may not need to be in the criminal justice system and who will have better outcomes for all of society if they don't go through. There are a lot of decisions that are made locally that can impact who goes into the jail and how long they stay. And that's what I think is important to keep in mind.
All right. And that is the work you're doing at the Vera Institute of Justice. Nancy Fishman is the project director at the Center on Sentencing and Corrections there. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Sure. Happy to do it.